Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.
Thanks for sticking with us, folks. Here's our final segment here on a great day in Tucson, Arizona on Circles of Change. Welcome in the studio, Pamela Doherty from Doherty Consulting. How are you this morning, Pamela?
I'm great. Thank you.
And, you know, as always, there's some way, I don't know how this happens, there are these threads that loop through my four guest segments. So here we just hosted a guest that talked about her work in brain disease and diagnostic equipment, and I know you've been involved in fundraising that area early in your career, right?
Absolutely. I spent time raising money for a local neurological institute, and it was really one of the highlights of my fundraising career.
Isn't that fabulous? Let me give an introduction. Pamela spent over 15 years in the philanthropy area before starting her own consulting practice in 2010, where she now helps clients develop strategies, systems, and communications for philanthropy and community relations. Pamela served as the CEO of Carondelet Foundation, which is what she was referring to, a division of the Carondelet Health Network, one of Tucson's top 10 employers. Supporting the charitable mission and goals of the organization, Pamela worked in partnership with the 25-member board of trustees and staff of 10 to generate an average of $5 million annually in philanthropic support, as well as to steward the foundation's $26 million in assets. Pamela previously was the founding executive director for the Center for Planned Giving at the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona, which provided training and counsel on board and staff development, deferred gift planning options, and fundraising to more than 100 nonprofit organizations. She's also worked with individuals, businesses, and families so they can sculpt their own plan in this important space, facilitating the creation of existing and deferred funds, life income gifts, and somewhere in the total value of $21 million over 4 years. Prior to fundraising, Pamela worked in the field of marketing communications. She holds a BA in communications and PR and a master's of public health from the University of Arizona here in Tucson. She's, of course, is a frequent guest presenter in a nonprofit educational conferences in the areas of fundraising, plan giving, governance, and leadership, and also enjoys contributing now as a business journalist around in greater Tucson. She's involved in boards of Arizona Public Media, the YWCA of Tucson. In fact, she's board chair. So a lot on your plate.
Yes.
Indeed, never stop. And we wanted to talk to this segment calling it Doing Good to Do Well. So this idea that this isn't an either or, it's how you can blend the two together.
Absolutely. You know, I've spent obviously most of my career in the area of philanthropy, and it occurred to me that I need to think about where does this all come from and how does it affect us as givers? Because while I was working with people to come up with these wonderful gift arrangements, it was very clear how those gifts were benefiting others. But it was also remarkable to see what happens to the giver during that exchange. So I've spent time reflecting on this, and, you know, it really comes down to something quite simple. I'm sure no surprise to most people. It is generosity. Generosity, which is a fundamental spiritual principle, and also this act of giving really is inherent in our DNA as human beings.
That generosity and that willingness to put others first.
Absolutely. The way we evolved as a species is by cooperating with one another. So 4 million years later, giving back, giving of ourselves, sharing that interconnectivity is really part of the fabric of who we are.
Now, some people would say, though, that really their charitable giving was all about leaving a legacy, that I want my name on the building, so to speak. And I'm certain there are people that feel that they want to have that sense of immortality in some way, what they leave behind. But I think more often than not, it's something much deeper, because many of the people I suspect you've worked with in the planned giving area chose to be anonymous.
Absolutely. But people do give to meet their own interests. And that's not a bad thing. You know, we call that in the area of philanthropy, you know, enlightened self-interest. We give to meet our own needs, but those needs are more often than not very altruistic. It's a need to be connected. It's a need to give back, to express appreciation, to know that we are making the world a better place for generations to come. And that's part of leaving a legacy.
You know, there's always been the challenging feeling out there that business, though, should be separate from the philanthropic segment. Of course, Milton Friedman, social responsibility and all that. But I think over the at least the 30 years I've been exposed to some of that cacophony around that subject, that there's a definite shift that's happened. Is a recognition, certainly here in the United States, of organizations needing to take hold of much bigger responsibility to help others, particularly in developing countries. Has that played forward in the type of work, and you see the, you know, a company you might call on in year X versus 5 years later to see if a shift has come in their own thought?
Well, certainly on a global scale, the business community has become engaged in ways that they weren't engaged before, and that is largely due to a lot of these young entrepreneurs becoming involved in philanthropy. And it's not as simple as a dichotomy of nonprofit versus for-profit. It's regardless of the model, whether an individual or a corporation can identify a pressing need and think about a creative way to address that need, and whether that is by contributing money or other resources or using one's voice, mm-hmm. individual or corporate voice, to effect change, that's really what counts. And so many people are doing amazing things on a global scale to that end. And I was just recently looking at the Giving Pledge website, which is a pledge of billionaires who have committed to giving most of their wealth to the common good. And really, some of the work is absolutely tremendous. Everything from, obviously, the Gates Foundation addressing AIDS on a global scale, to philanthropists who are engaged in providing books to inner city schools here in the U.S.
That's right. But also, though, this idea that even $5 counts. So there's a give5.org that you can even do through your mobile phone, or to have watched what happened when the Haiti crisis came out that really fueled it through using of social media.
Absolutely. Social media is certainly a factor and a trend now that has changed the face of philanthropy. You know, traditionally we think of philanthropy as writing a check to your favorite charitable organization, which is wonderful. But certainly social media has elevated the conversation and our ability to create an impact by, again, using our voice and engaging other people, creating awareness, mobilizing to further the common good.
I still think, though, there's an element of philanthropy that goes way beyond, though, writing the check. And sometimes that we overlook the power of not just writing the check for the food bank, but actually going and delivering the food to the bank. You know, I know here in town a lot of the schools have, community service hours that their students have to engage in before they progress to the next year. And it's one thing to have the kids go collect money through a bake sale and then donate the money. It's another thing if they're baking the goods and taking it to the shelter.
Right. So the definition of philanthropy comes from a Greek word which means love of humankind. And we can express that love, that generosity, in many forms, including contributing our time and our talents and, of course, our financial means and our voice and our networks, a mix of resources to make a difference in the world around us, whether that's our neighborhood or our community, our country.
Mm-hmm.
The globe.
I mentioned in the introduction that you started your career by studying marketing and public relations. Ever dawn on you how then the thread projected you then into the whole area of using these skills in the philanthropy and community service area?
Absolutely. On a fundraising side, of course, you are conveying what you hope is a compelling case for support. You're using your persuasive skills, if you will, to engage others to join the mission of the organization to move it forward. So certainly there is a connection. I started by working in the area of advertising and public relations, loved it, but realized that that power of communication could be put toward making the world a better place in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The differences you see across the landscape of philanthropy now, generationally, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned the young entrepreneurs that are, you know, developing products that I just read about one that's a soccer ball that if you kick it enough, it generates energy that can power up a light bulb.
Absolutely.
Two young students from Harvard Business School that are now founding and looking for money to take that forward. Is it that we didn't have that kind of stuff going on before, or it was overshadowed by other bigger company organization type things, or mm-hmm. do you think there's a tipping point that's played out here in the world?
Absolutely. You know, the traditional model came from a sense of giving back to a community or a country that made one great and helped one amass assets. But with a more entrepreneurial spirit in this country and people who are making millions at a very young age, that has changed the tenor of philanthropy. Entrepreneurs want to be hands-on. Mm-hmm. They want to not only give their assets, but also they want to be able to lend their expertise and their talents, and they want to see a demonstrated impact. I think everyone wants to think or wants to know that their gift has made a difference, but these younger entrepreneurs really want to see the numbers and want to see a very palpable demonstration of the impact that their gift has made.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. We're speaking with Pamela Doherty, by the way, and Pamela obviously knows this field inside and out. You spent so many years there and herself shifting into now consulting with organizations. What, tell us about the variety of clients you're now serving now as a solopreneur.
Well, in the last 2 years, I've worked with a variety of different nonprofit organizations, private family foundation, and all with very diverse and exceptional missions, and really doing many things so well. One of the things that's challenging sometimes for organizations, though, is developing their case and expressing and articulating in a way that brings people into the fold and into the life of the organization.
So the idea of the simple return on investment calculation is a lot more complex in this field as opposed to my decision on whether to invest in a separate manufacturing line to make, you know, so many more widgets.
Absolutely. In the past, when I've worked with individual philanthropists, I have also seen people who want to make a difference but don't really know where to start. And I think it's incumbent upon nonprofit organizations to help people do that in a way that is meaningful to them. And so really what I advise people is to think about what your intention is and then devise a strategy for your philanthropy and whatever that philanthropy means to you. So really being more organized, clarifying your vision, your personal mission, your mm-hmm. family's mission, and how that comes into play and how your passions and interests intersect with the objectives of an organization.
Just going to play more. You know, the one challenge I noticed here, again, we're a transplant from New England coming here to Arizona, is that there are so many different choices here in Arizona, and it seems like a lot of nonprofits all in a similar space. And so I don't know, again, you've done work primarily here in Arizona, but I'm sure you've got networks elsewhere. Are we at all confusing the market, meaning those of us who'd like to write the check, but there's just too many things that look alike, so I don't know which one to select?
I hear that a lot. And we have a million charitable organizations in this country and many, many here in our local community, and it can be complex sometimes for people to discern and really identify the organizations that are making the greatest difference. So I would say to you to spend a little time researching the organization, getting to know the organization, taking a look at financials. You know, it's not as easy as looking to see how much money is being spent on administration versus program. It's a little more nuanced than that. So think about what you care about. Take a look, for example, at how the organization allocates its funding between or among, you know, advocacy, mm-hmm. program, outreach, research, and think about how that intersects with your passion.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And then also know that you don't, you aren't necessarily locking in for a series of years. You could need to surf around and change your portfolio, just like you do your investment portfolio for stocks and bonds.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to evaluate how the charitable organization is doing, but also to assess how you are doing as a philanthropist. And those things might change over time. So ask yourself, are you providing a mix of resources at your disposal to make a difference? Not only your financial commitment, but your network, your voice, your time, your talent. Are you addressing an issue that is pressing in society? Are you addressing an issue that, if solved, would have a ripple effect in society? You know, there are many ways to gauge whether you're being successful and impactful with your
philanthropy. So what would be one of those ripple effect?
So, for example, at the YWCA, we work with immigrant women and help them achieve a certain level of education, because statistics show, studies show, that a mother's level of education determines a child's level of education. And, you know, think about the implications for society. If we can help women get their GED and become financially stable and independent, that translates into something much bigger than helping that individual woman and family.
Right, because then it has that ripple. And the flip side of that is just like those who are investing now to help graduate more high school graduates that can continue on productive life, because the backflip of not doing that is creating greater social service needs, welfare, and dealing with teen alcoholism and youth problems of not having made that investment up front.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The agendas that you see play out then on a national level, are they similar to what we see here in Arizona and Tucson? You know, if you looked upon philanthropy and the basis, I mean, obviously we know one here in our state is education and helping youth. And as you say, a real mixed race population that we have here with as many immigrants that we have from a variety of places, not just Mexico.
Right. Well, on the international scale, you know, the needs are varied. But what is common, of course, is for philanthropists and organizations to address very basic fundamental needs, many of which we don't, we have the luxury of not having to cope with here in the United States. Things, of course, like access to clean water, nutrition, disease that, you know, we, again, thankfully don't have to cope with here in the United States.
To the fullest extent, although
absolutely.
We certainly do have pockets of concern.
Of course. And of course, with the global economy, we're seeing sometimes a reoccurrence of some of those diseases. But, you know, fundamental issues of poverty are huge on the world stage. That's not to say that we don't have similar needs here in the U.S. In the U.S., most people who engage in philanthropy give to religious causes and education.
Those are the two big ones, yeah. I mentioned in the introduction, of course, that you were the founding executive director involved in a community foundation. Perhaps you want to explain what a community foundation is all about.
A community foundation is a wonderful tool for giving, in that a community foundation can help a philanthropist identify what the most pressing needs of a community are. So if a person doesn't have the time or the inclination to do that research, a community foundation can provide that information for you. In addition, a community foundation has tools to help you allocate your assets and different vehicles for giving, one of which is a donor-advised fund. So oftentimes people think that perhaps starting their own foundation is the way to go. A donor advice fund, for example, is a much simpler way to allocate your dollars.
And so, in other words, a community foundation can actually also carry the overhead, so
Absolutely.
You don't have to do that as well.
Absolutely. Handle a lot of the administration.
Inside of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there are tax benefits to that model.
Yeah. The idea, then, the community foundation, typically what happens is they have a season in which they are open to grants coming forward, to then they decide how they parse out their monies. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. So that's one component, a competitive grant round, but also working with individual philanthropists to address the areas that individual person or family cares about.
to make sure that it really targeted to get where they're going.
Absolutely.
Pamela, you've been in business now for yourself for two years now doing this type of work. Advice, thoughts, reactions, gee, I never thought I'd be doing this now, or what's next?
Well, I have to say I love being self-employed. I love being my own boss. I love the variety that comes from this kind of work, and I love the fact that I can make choices to align myself with projects and organizations and causes that speak to me and that I believe are really making a difference and really having an impact on our community and the world around us.
Any of the I wish I'd known that when type experiences though hitting you? If you think about being grateful for, you know, so that's why I had to go through all that budget-related things when you were CEO at Carondelet Foundation.
No, you know, I'm happy for that experience. I think it certainly helped shape my perspective on the work I want to do today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, philanthropy has always been so profound to be involved with. And, you know, I come from now many different angles. But it's still all about, again, as we started with, about generosity and people wanting to make a difference.
That's great. And Pamela Doherty, how can people get a hold of you if they're interested to continue the dialogue?
Email pamela@pameladoherty.com.
.com. Terrific. Thanks so much. And look forward to watching your continued touch and guidance for others as they look to be part of that generosity and connection of well-being circle.
Thank you.
Very pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.